You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Belinda Coker. And this is a super fun story. We talk about a time about 5 years before this episode is recorded when Belinda decided to take on a major physical challenge. And this came in the form of a multi-day solo hike. So I'm not going to give this story away in the intro because it's too fun and you want to listen to it as she tells it. But I can just tell you that whatever you probably think this story is going to be, it may not be that. It just may not be that. So be prepared for the twists and turns. She shares what her life was like before this decision she made, what the actual experiences was like when she was doing it, pushing herself through the challenge, and how that decision and the challenge changed her personal perspective moving forward. Plus, I do ask her all about the creepy crawly animals that one might find on a hike through nature where she lives. I do. I think you're going to love it, so let's do it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Belinda Coker, are you ready for a fun chat today?
Yes. Hi, Amy. I sure am.
Yay. I'm so happy to have you. All right. So my two warm-up questions are, what part of the world do you call home?
Oh, now that's a really tricky one. That really is a tricky one because I have dual nationality, New Zealand and Australia. And I identify with either country depending on who I'm talking to. If I want to impress somebody with hiking, I say I'm from New Zealand, and it depends. But right now, I'm actually looking at Scotland being a home base for a while. My partner and I are basing ourselves in the Northern Hemisphere, and as I'm an Antipodean, we're allowed 6 months a year in the UK, as long as we don't take a job off somebody. And yes, so we are basing ourselves in Bonnie, Scotland.
That is very exciting. So are you in Scotland now? So if I ask okay, so where are you?
No. Right now, I'm at my friend's house in Winchester.
Okay.
Yes, so I'll explain to you how I got here in a hurried few days later on in the conversation.
Very good. So then this question, the question I've been asking people is, what is something so we'll ask it about Scotland. What is something that you think you will like and enjoy about Scotland?
Okay. If I was to choose between Scotland and England, I would choose Scotland. My apologies in advance to all the Brits. I just love I love the sense of humour. I just love the culture up there. I love the Highlands, the outdoors. It is beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful, and it really is. You're not very far at any stage in Scotland to be. You're not very far from true wilderness. It really is lovely. Whereas, you can just walk for a couple of hours in England and you come across a village, the wilderness just isn't there. Yeah.
More developed for sure. All right. That is a very exciting thing. I've not been to Scotland. I would like to go.
Yeah.
So today you touched on wilderness and being close to wilderness. What we're going to talk about today is how you made the decision, the first decision some time ago, to take a multi-day solo hike. And I'm excited to hear about this. You've done lots. This is not something that happened just last week. So let's talk about back before you did the first solo hike. Had you done other solo things like solo travel or group hiking? Like what was your starting point?
Okay, so I've done a lot of solo travel throughout my life, and you can probably put it into three stages. The first, when I was in my early 20s, I went traveling on my own and ended up in Asia and, doing the, and I'm going to use the term backpacking as in how young people travel around the world, not backpacking as in hiking. So there is a clear distinction. Backpacking as in hiking is a true Americanism. So I did a lot of solo hiking, solo traveling back then, with a backpack, but being young and free, and I did some voluntary work in India, and did all sorts of exciting things. And then I ended up meeting my children's father and settling down in Australia. So originally I'm from I was born in New Zealand, and so I met my children's father and in Japan. We were both teaching English in Japan many years ago, and we ended up living in Australia. And then I started doing a lot of business travel on my own. So I was kind of in a marketing management role, and I was traveling all over the world to trade shows, and quite often we'd have other staff, and but a lot of the time I was actually on my own. And it, and even though that's, everyone says, oh yes, business travel, that's sort of cushy and all that sort of thing, it is one of those things where you do have to think on the fly. You have to think for yourself. You have to be autonomous. It's not like you can really rely on anything, and things can and do go wrong. I mean, I've got quite an interesting story about something going extremely wrong in Venezuela. And then it was probably in tw 2020. So right during the pandemic, and that's when I started joined a hiking group. Oh, sorry, I'm just going to backtrack. I used to do a lot of hiking when I was in high
Okay.
school and early university. But for 35 years, I, hung up my hiking boots, if you can. Whatever. Hung up my hiking poles.
Exactly. So what I hear you saying is that you have a history of being adventurous in solo travel as a youth, and also in your corporate life, owning the fact that even if somebody else assigns the trip for you while you're doing it, you have to figure it out by yourself and be able to manage it. And I think that that's really good. So you had been a hiking enthusiast when you were in your teens, maybe early 20s. And then it sounds like there was a season of life where there was no space for this.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we all get married, we have children, we not not we sorry, I don't mean we all get married and have children, but when you do, have children, you have a family, you have to wear so many hats. I had to wear a business hat, had to wear a mum hat, I had to wear a wife hat, and probably a few others as well. And so certain things in your life just go by the wayside. Yes, we'd go on family holidays and all that sort of thing, but there wasn't, and that was actually the day that I looked in the mirror in 2020, and I saw someone who was 55 years old. I turned 60 a couple of months ago, and I saw someone who was quite overweight, tired. Menopause hadn't been kind to me. I was probably drinking far too much. Glass of wine here, glass of wine there, and it all adds up. And I was unfit. You name it. I just looked in the mirror and I thought, my God, where has that girl gone? Where have you gone? What's gone on? And it had nothing really to do with the pandemic. We as a family really embraced the pandemic. We actually had a great time in our house, and I know I do say that with the understanding that some other people didn't. This decision was basically was it was pr probably because I was given a chance to sit back and take a good long look at myself in the mirror, take a look at my family, take a look at everything. And I think a lot of people got that chance to do that during the pandemic. And mine was looking in the mirror and saying, okay, you are a bit of a mess.
So then this happened. So this happens in 2020. Were you in Australia for lockdown? Okay. So the rules around lockdown, my understanding, are were pretty strict in
Not
a...
in Queensland. So I was
Okay.
based in Queensland, and we there was probably about 50% of the states in Australia. There's seven states in Australia. 50% of them were very strict, and the other 50% was so lax it was ridiculous. So
Okay.
I was in a lax state. My brother was in a very strict state, and I think he was seeking psychiatric treatment. So,
I think that's a fair experience. Like that we in the States, we had locations that were it was very different depending on where you were, and that's fair. So, but it did give you the opportunity to examine your life. And one of the things that you decide to do then is taking this multi-day solo hike.
I actually started off with day hikes, so I
Okay,
did
so day
a
hikes.
yeah, I did a I did a year of day hikes, and I joined a meetup group, the meetup app.
Yep.
Joined one of those, and I was probably the youngest. Everybody else was in their 70s or 80s, and we went on this 17-kilometer hike. I would like to say that's about 10 miles, 12
Something like
miles.
that. So if 10K is 6 miles, so 20K is 12 miles. So yeah, I think that's about right.
And it was quite high ascent and descent, and these older people that they were just they were so strong, they were so fit, and here I was just I can remember just like I couldn't keep up, and I just felt I just felt bleh.
Yeah.
I just felt awful. I just really did. And I felt ashamed at how I had become. And not in a, I mean, they were all very nice. Nobody was, and some of them are actually very good friends. So still great friends to today. And so I then thought, right, okay, this is great. And this is great exercise. And I want to be like them. I really, really want to be like them. I want their vigor. I want their enthusiasm. I want that lovely glow that they've all got. And the other thing was is that the hike was in the rainforest. So Southeast Queensland has got this most beautiful rainforest, and everything is emerald green, and it's all dripping with water, and it's just gorgeous. It's like something out of Avatar. And I can just remember just walking through and just going, my God, this is just so beautiful. And I could feel all my stresses and anxieties just being lifted, like the rainforest was this giant sponge. And so I began to go up probably twice a week. And some mornings I would leave the home at 3, 4 a.m. and get up there for sunrise. It was an hour and a half drive. I really, really took I really owned this whole hiking
Wow.
thing. I just thought, right. And I began to absolutely love it. And I began to research more and join Facebook groups and people reading about people going on multi-day hikes. I thought, oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
That does.
And
And so
so that's how you start. You join a meetup group looking for community and connection in your community, and you meet wonderful people and you fall in love and you embrace this. Your confidence is growing. And then the next, you were, I almost pretty much interrupted you, but you were going there. Talk us through the jump from day hikes in a group to multi-day hike by yourself, which I think would include some camping.
Absolutely. So here I am. I've been doing business trips and staying in five-star hotels and all this sort of thing. So, and I hadn't actually been camping with the kids for probably about 10 to 12 years. And even then, it was sort of like a big, nice kind of setup. And, it wasn't. And so I thought, right, okay, I'm going to go on an overnight hike, So I sort of planned. It was over the new year, and I, went out and bought this beautiful tent, and bought all the cooker and everything, and I hadn't even used anything, and I went on my first hike. That's just the number one no-no rule. But I planned to go on a multi-day hike quite close to home. And there was this huge storm, and the whole national park was closed, or not the national park, but the trail was closed. So I ended up having a look, well, where else can I go? And Victoria, even though it was such a strict lockdown state, the one place where this walk called the Great Ocean Walk it was open, and I could go there, and I could get last minute because the whole of Victoria, apart from this one small area, was in complete lockdown. And I just packed up everything in my pack. It was probably too big, and everything, but I learned so much on that trail. I really did. I can remember filtering green water for the very first time and watching it come out clean and saying to somebody, "Look at this, look at this, look how clean my water is." Just all sorts of little things. And my blog post on that really is, hiking, overnight hiking for the very first time. And it's, you're so pleased with yourself. Every little thing that you achieve, even going to the toilet for the very first time and digging that hole and things like that. I was just like, oh, like I've done that. So that was when it started. That was when it started.
No, that's, I mean, everything is such an achievement when you do the new thing for the first time. And so I think it's helpful for people to hear that you started within a community and you learned some things. You modified the first trip because things happened that were not expected, which probably felt like a pretty big obstacle at the time, like what you thought you were going to be able to do, you couldn't do. And did you, the first overnight hike you did with some camping, was it just one night in the park?
No, it was seven. So I went
Seven,
from
you go from day
I
hikes to 7 nights. Oh my
yeah
gosh,
my first
Belinda.
my first the one that I had originally planned was only 2 days. So yes, so I went out and I bought all this food, and I was totally on the wrong track on so many things, but I just learned so much, and it was liberating. It was so liberating after corporate travel and just being, bindi housewife. All of a sudden I was out and doing things with, other fit people, and I just felt really good about myself.
So, how old were your kids at this time?
Okay,
Roughly,
so
just approximately. You don't have to be
yeah, no,
specific.
they at this stage they were year 11 and year 12, the youngest ones, and the oldest one was final year of university. So
All right. So, what did your family say when you were like, I'm gonna go out to the trail for 7 days by myself? Like, what feedback did you get from them?
I think my son said, that's the oldest one, I think he went, "Yeah, cool, mum."
Okay.
And I really think the other two were just so, a year 11 and a year 12 kids, they're just so involved with themselves. And I think this was part of my whole thing back then. I just had children at the age where there's so much self-involvement. And I just, nobody really, really batted an eyelid.
Fascinating.
And now they all want to be, emergency contacts on my Garmin inReach. It's just
So yeah, so what so and what did your were you married at that time? Did you have a husband? So okay, so he didn't, his opinion did not weigh in. He didn't get a vote. Okay, so how did your hiking friends respond? Because they had hiked with you in the group when you said, hey, listen, I'm going to jump right into this 7 day hike. Were they cheerleaders, or were they like, that's going to be a lot. We may want to make a plan.
That was it really was. And they all said, "Yes, you can do it. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that?" So a few of them had done multi-day hikes before, but most of them were just day hikers, and they're just like, well, it'll be safe because, the worst thing can happen is snakes, but we just have a lot of snakes up in the Lamington National Park behind where I live as well. So I knew about snakes. I knew about, what to do around snakes. So that wasn't really a problem. I think because the trail that I was doing was quite well known, I think everyone was more excited for me. I don't think I told any of my non-hiking friends up what I was doing, because the change to go and off and do the seven day hike was literally a 24-hour sort of,
Okay.
decision. So
Very fast change. But
yeah.
I think, I mean, anytime you're going to do, you're making, anytime I'm making a change in my life, I'll phrase it personally because I'm not an expert to do this. I have learned to be careful who I tell, because if I have any apprehension about what I'm trying, I want to be careful that the people I tell are going to be on my side.
Yeah,
And as
absolutely.
opposed to telling people who are going to be like, why would you do that? You know, what are you thinking? All right. So a multi-day solo hike is absolutely something that has the potential to stretch your boundaries in all kinds of way. Travel always pushes our boundaries because there's no way to go through without having something new or something. We're not in control of so much of it. And so let's go through, what were some of the things that went according to plan on the, what were some of the things you planned for to be prepared for the elements and the situation on this multi-day hike? You mentioned, for example, you mentioned the shovel for doing your business in the nature, and also filtering water because you weren't going to be able to carry 7 days worth of water. What were some other things that you planned for that long trip?
Well, I kind of had enough food, and I'd bought the dehydrated meals. I had never had a dehydrated meal before, where you just add the water. I really was a newbie. I really was a newbie. I had a river crossing, but the government website for this particular hike was very strong on, there are river crossings here, there are tides that you need to make sure. So I had everything sort of listed down, and I was kind of super paranoid as well. So I was actually very prepared. I think I just wanted to do it right. I really wanted to do it right. And I think when you first find something that you really love, that you embrace, it's kind of like any homework is just. It's just so exciting. I mean, I sew, and I love, looking for patterns, learning new ways to, insert the sleeve or whatever. And it's like, when you find something you really enjoy, doing all the research is something which is great. But then, in this last hike that I've just done, I have completely screwed up. So.
So, all right. So, in the thread of, so we're going to come back to the hike. Let's try to finish out the highlight and the good things, because you finish this multi-day hike and you love it enough that it becomes something you do again and again. When you, let's talk briefly about, because one of the things that comes up when I talk to women about doing things alone is the conversation about feeling safe and making sure that you had that. Did you have, I'm sure you did, but let's talk about what kind of plan or thinking did you have before you started this first hike of what you might do if something went wrong?
Okay, so the my one fear was a fire, because
Okay.
this area is in a high fire area. So I actually went to the police station before I went and said, "I'm here to register myself going on this walk." And the policeman looked at me and went, "Yeah," and I said, "Yes, but it's a fire. It's a high fire area." And I knew that you basically started at one end. This is one of those hikes where you're only allowed to go in one direction. It's because of the flora and the fauna. You don't want there's certain environmental aspects to why you need to do that. And I actually knew that I would be probably going on the trail at the same time as other people. So I knew that I wouldn't be completely on my own. There were certain campsites that you had to stop at on the way. So even though it was wilderness, it wasn't wilderness like what I now do. There was still, when I got to each campsite, I got to know the other people, and there were I would sit around with the other people and listen to everyone talk about this hike and that hike and what they're doing for dinner and all that sort of thing. And it was just a huge learning experience for me. I don't think I even thought anything could go wrong.
Well, that's one of the things before you do something, sometimes you have a limited amount of information about, what do you say? Like, ignorance is bliss. If you don't know what can go wrong, you're not worried about it.
Exactly. And that is a huge problem. That is especially in the hiking community, that is a huge problem, and this is why you see in social media so many hikers getting rescued here and rescued there and deaths, and it really is a big problem. Had I take if I was doing that hike again, I probably would have done a few things differently.
Which is probably also always the situation. And you can probably do everything right and things still go wrong. When you finished that first hike that you changed at the last minute, you had been in this transformational time in your life. It's quite a bit of time to be on your own, a week in the on a hike. How did you feel when you finished that first hike?
Oh, I've got a photo of myself just like, whoa, I've done it. Like, I really, really was. I was elated. I really was elated. I felt after a year, quite a few years of, I'd been a solo mother for probably, 10 years. And after, giving my all for everybody else, I suddenly felt I'd done something for myself. It really was. I still remember the feeling. It really was amazing, and it really was incredible.
I love that. And so you were at the time you did this first hike, you were 55. That I think I brought that back up because I think that it's an interesting season of women's life where you might feel like sometimes things are out of reach, like that it might not be there. All right. So you have gone on to do many more of these. You just finished one that we'll definitely talk about. In what way, though, did that first hike and making that first decision? It's one of the choices you had that it was definitely there. When the first hike, the overnight hike, got sort of washed out, you could have decided to not do it. And instead, you made a choice to make a new plan and take on the bigger challenge. So, looking back, in what ways do you think taking on and succeeding at that first challenge changed your life?
It really gave me it made me realize that I can do anything, and that I'm not just, and I say this not just a housewife. I don't, I'm saying that in jest. It's but I just felt that I really was someone to myself. It wasn't like I didn't I don't think I think I maybe posted it on Facebook, but I didn't. I just really felt like I'd done something for myself, and that really was just so important. I can't stress how good that made me feel. And sorry, I've forgotten the question.
No, that was it. How did taking that on change your perspective and the way you looked at your life? I think that there's a lot of the only people in the planet who can make new human beings are women. And so it's a really, really valued job, but the flip side of that is that even if you do a lot of that, it doesn't actually take up your whole life. It's a season of our lives. And so I think that it's sometimes when we say, I feel like I was doing a lot for the people in my life, it feels like we're poo-pooing on the role. But you mentioned at the beginning that your children had reached a season of independence and they didn't need you for juice boxes and help at the table at that point. And so I think that's that. Okay, so you very recently, maybe just to, very recently, you've done many hikes. You very recently finished one that didn't go the way you thought it would be. And I didn't know that till we started this conversation. I was going to ask you about, what are some of the other cool things you've done? What are some things you want to do? But tell us what you tried and what, how you're recovering from the reset.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to backtrack just one little stage. Quite a few years. So after that very first hike, I then went off and did a wilderness first aid, and I really felt I really took this whole thing by the, by the reins. I wanted it. I wanted more and more of it. I wanted that feeling of elation after I finished a hike each time. So, I've done some great ones like, the Arctic Circle in Greenland. That was a solo crossing and whatnot. So,
And so what you're saying is before you took those on, you took some time to really learn some of the specialized skills to be able to level up. Okay, that's a good point.
A couple of years ago, I wrote a book on health, safety, and hygiene on the trail because it is so important. You see so, as I said before, you see so many people injured and and dying and whatnot on the trail. And my recent hike in the Canary Islands really brought that home, how dangerous a trail actually is. So I was attempting to do a traverse of the Canary Islands. The Canary Islands are a autonomous but Spanish governed group of islands off the west coast of Africa, very close to the Western Sahara. So they're beautiful. They're all volcanic, and absolutely lovely. So the trail, which is called the GR131, traverses through all seven of the islands. There's actually eight, but they call them seven. And
As one does.
and it and it started off so well, and the first one I went to was La Palma, and it was absolutely gorgeous, and I was cold soaking all my food because wine and cheese and meats and everything, it's sort of plentiful and dirt cheap, and it was absolutely lovely. And then New Year Day came. And I was on island number two, and we had a hurricane. And
Oh,
I suddenly,
goodness.
I was asleep, and it was rainy and windy, and I was just, trying to close my eyes, trying to get some sleep. And then all of a sudden, I felt my tent across my face, and I think, oh God, what is it? A broken pole? Anyway, I can fix a broken pole. I had the tools in my pack to fix ripped tent. Broken pole, you name it, I could probably do it. And what was actually broken was a little Y connector. And I sort of got out, and everything was wet. It was cold. They were having the coldest winter ever. And I just sort of MacGyvered, I melted a toothbrush to try and melt and make a thing. I was anything I could do, I was trying to do. I've sort of got a little sort of kit with me. And in the end, it was just, I just couldn't. So I had to sort of, go back down to the town and go across to the main island and pick up a new tent. And, then I, went back and, got this tent. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't like my fantastic one, but it did the job. It provided a shelter. Happy days. So off I went. I went, right, okay, well, that's, 5 days out of my itinerary. I'm going to have to make this up. Doesn't matter. Let's just keep going. So I got to the island of Tenerife, which has the highest mountain in Spain. So the highest mountain in Spain is actually on one of these islands. And my first hike up was 1600 meters. I'm not sure what that is in
It's about
feet.
6,000 feet. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad you know all this.
Yeah, they
And
do the same thing. I do like some running. I do running and cycling, and so
right.
I have to do that math. I'm like 2,000 meters. That's how many feet, because we're the only people who use the feet. Not the only, but so yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you. So that's quite a lot of altitude in one hike.
And I knew that I was, and I was probably a little bit dehydrated, as you would expect. But I saw there was a band of cloud. Now, all of these islands have got like a little hat of clouds sitting on top of each one. And I checked the weather, and it was sunny, and it was fine. And I kind of thought, okay, well, it's cloud. The last two islands have had cloud. It's not that bad. And by the way, the highest peak stands at 3,000 meters, so we were nowhere near that. I was nowhere near that. And then suddenly, so I was, off I went, hiking up through, and it was a very, very sharp slope of what I was hiking up. So there was no chance to pitch my tent until I knew that I got to the top. And then all of a sudden, it started raining, and I ended up getting absolutely soaked. And then it went down to 2 degrees Celsius, which is about 35 degrees
35, yeah. Fahrenheit,
Fahrenheit.
yeah, very cold.
And I ended up in the danger zone for hypothermia, and I was shivering, and I was just like, okay, I had a Garmin Mini. I thought, okay, this is the very first time that my electronics failed. Your iPhone does not work in the middle of the clouds.
No.
You, it doesn't. It doesn't. I had a compass. And all the things that I always say to do, always take a map. I had a compass, but didn't have a map. I thought, right, okay, I can push the SOS button, but I have no concept of what the capabilities are on these islands of search and rescue.
Right.
These islands are remote. And I then thought, right, okay, so I'm really cold and I'm really wet. There's nowhere to pitch my tent. I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
I'm in real trouble. And I got that violent shaking in my gut. It was my core trying to warm up. And I knew that, if I didn't get to shelter soon, it would probably end up in disaster. So I managed to sort of dry my phone enough to see the map, and I saw that there was a road, probably about half a kilometer.
Yep, a half a kilometer. What half a so half a kilometer? Not very far.
Not very far, not very far, but overland. And
Okay.
even though it was quite steep, I could kind of tell. I was looking at a topographic map on my phone. I could tell, and I could sort of bird's eye it, that it would be okay. So I sort of set my compass, and I walked. And when you're cold and you're wet, and it's that temperature, when you're moving, you cannot make up the heat that you're losing. And I knew, and I just got to the road, and I was stumbling. I was just like, oh my God, and I kind of knew. I just went into, you have two choices. You can give this a go, or you can sit here and push the button, and you might not get help. And so I it was a main road, lots of people going to Mount Tenay, and I put my feet out and started hitchhiking, and this young French couple picked me up, and they took one look at me, and they just drove me straight down to the nearest town.
Yeah,
They were just
no.
like, I have never, I was fine. I was fine until a couple of days later, when I realized the severity of what had happened, that I just went, okay, that is anything that could have gone wrong, and that hike went wrong. And
But in hindsight, it is your training that got you through that. And I say training in terms of education and awareness because, you knew enough to evaluate the decisions, and you were almost definitely in in some stage of shock. But we talked about it earlier that if you don't know, you can't evaluate, you don't know what can go wrong. And it's a completely different thing to know that hypothermia is possible. It's another thing to go through the training of, listen, if the water falling from the sky is 35 degrees and my body temperature is supposed to be 96 degrees, those two things, that's a big gap. And to identify that core shaking where your body is trying to warm you up. But you were like moving, I'm sure you were white. I'm sure you were, and you probably had that very open-eyed look that we get, and you had some luck there too, that so you were able to read the map, you were able to make a judgment call, and some luck that nothing else went wrong. Like we, you know, so and I'm not a multi-day hiker, but weather in the mountains is ridiculous. It's like impossible to forecast. It's like they tell you, sure, it's sunny, and you look out your window and you're like, no, it's snowing,
I know.
So and then, but you do say, I think that's also another important thing to say, that it took a couple of days for the gravity of what you had actually gone through to begin to sink in. And I think that many people who are listening, they have that various experience when you're in an intense situation where the only thing to do is move forward. Sometimes you look back and you're like, what were we doing?
I know.
All right,
So
so you're recovering from that reassessment. What are some things, do you think you'll go back and try that one again, or what are some hikes that are on your to-do list?
yes, well, my partner wants to come and do that,
The
the
Canary Islands.
TR13, with me. So that's probably scheduled for March next year or the end of this year. The next one is going to be in Greece. So there's in April and May, we've got three hikes scheduled for Greece. One on a traverse of the island of Corfu, and another one on the east coast of Greece. So very
Beautiful.
excited about that. And and many of your listeners might be wondering, well, how does she sort of go from being a housewife to running around the world like a backpacking teenager? I made the decision that I didn't want to wait until 70, 67 to retire. Both my partner and I, we're early retirees, and we just live frugally. I really do believe that you can live. Simple is great. Simple is better. We just do things very cheaply. Until we're 67 and we start getting all the money that we've been putting towards for our superannuation, or I think you call it a 401.
Right,
But
that's the name of our accounts, yes.
I truly do believe that the longer the when you can t if you can take an early retirement, if you are actually able to, then I think that's very healthy for you if you're able to. Not everybody can, but I, a lot of people that I know, they just want they just want to hang on and hang on and work and work and work and work, and there's enough,
Right. Yeah.
What more do you want?
And not everybody's going to want a solo hike across the islands in the Canaries or in Greece, but it's my opinion that you got to be careful to say that, hey, I'm going to do this in 10 years. Hey, I'm going to do this in 5 years. Whatever that marshmallow, whatever that carrot is, because it's not guaranteed at that time. And also, if those pursuits are physical in nature, like I want to travel long distances, I want to hike, I want to climb, we don't get more strong in our 70s than in our 50s. And so there's so many stories, so many cautionary tales of people who thought that they would be able to do things after retirement. And then what happens is they don't actually have the chance. So I think that is a very a helpful lesson, because one of the goals of this show is to cross the age group lines, like to give people an opportunity in their 20s and 30s to hear from people who are older, and also the other way, because hanging around young people does inspire us and keep us young. So they have a lot to learn from them. So tell us what, so do you do a lot of this? You've written some books, you've got some things like that. Are you a full-time traveler, or do you have a cottage business that is also sort of on the side here?
Right. Okay. So I have my my hiking blog,
Okay.
which is more of a hobby, really.
Sure.
and it's an enjoyment thing. I mean, I like to think of it as an education hub. It's if of course I write up about trails, but I also write up articles on the difference between Australian and US snake bites. I mean, they're completely different. If you manage one the wrong way, you are going to lose end up losing a limb or your life. Our snakes are different. And so there's all sorts of things like that. So I like to think that that's kind of like an educational thing. One of the other things that my partner and I do, we house sit, when we can't, in between hikes, and that allows us to, to live in a community. And we actually do the same house sit every single once every four times a year now. So, but and so from that, I run the House Sitting Collective, which teaches people how to house sit. So,
Very
and that's a
nice.
great way to travel when you are our age. And I think, you've got to think that you've got to try and make things as easy for you as possible. And by doing that, just eating healthily, just doing, weight, hiking is a weight-bearing exercise, and you are using so many different muscles and, cognitive skills that, within your, on your hike, that you don't do when you're just walking the pavements around a city. So,
That is
and
a good example. All right. Those are very cool things. So you have a special offer. I'm glad you mentioned the house sitting. I am. I've that's come up. You have a special offer for the audience, which is about the House Sitting Collective. It's a course, and people can get 20% off the course, available at House Sitting Collective and using the code adulting. That link is in the show notes where people are listening or watching the show. And also for anybody who is a subscriber to my email community, that's usually the easy, I think that's the easiest way to get these links. So I invite everybody to join. I want to thank you, Belinda, for that very generous offer. I've loved this story. Are you ready to wrap this up with my final three questions?
Absolutely.
All right. I'm excited about this. All right. So you may have actually answered this. I write these before the interview, so I don't know. But as somebody who has spent a lot of time outside in the elements of nature, what is one type of weather that you really do not like to be outside in?
The heat.
Oh, the heat. I would have expected
Oh
you'd
my
say
gosh,
cold
no, I
rain.
hate it.
Okay.
Hate
Fair. I would have
it.
expected you to say the cold rain based on
No,
that
no.
story, but all right,
Yeah.
very good.
I'm not very good in the heat. Yep.
Okay, very interesting. All right, you to do all this travel, I think you've probably also done a lot of big time flights, long flights. What, how do you like to keep yourself entertained and occupied on long flights? Are you somebody who reads books? Do you watch movies? Do you talk to strangers next to you? What do you do?
A bit of talking to strangers, and also I treat it as a day in bed watching movies.
Ah, very nice.
I mean, I don't ride in the pointy part of the plane anymore, but I still it's still, as far as I'm concerned, it's headphones on and watch movies, because it's something I enjoy. I probably don't. I don't read, because I don't carry books around with me.
Okay.
I haven't read for a long time, actually. I find Kindles so hard to read books on. I like proper books.
Very nice. Oh, that is very good. All right. So you mentioned the snakes in Australia. The wildlife in Australia is famous. In your opinion, what is the scariest animal in Australia?
Okay, I'm not scared of snakes, and I'm not scared of snakes and spiders.
Okay.
I am petrified of magpies. So
Those are
magpies,
birds, right?
they're birds and they're horrible. When they're nesting, they swoop. I have had gouges out of my bike helmet, like half an inch long. They're nasty.
Wow.
They are really, really nasty. They're horrible. I have a bird phobia though, so
Magpies. So I see the like on the I see pictures of the big spiders in Australia, and I think to myself, not sure what I would do if I came face to face with that, you know. Snakes tend to avoid me, so I proceed forward with if I stomp around if I'm loud. Hopefully they will skitter away. But yeah, so that is so magpies. I love it. That's it, Belinda. Thank you so much for sharing this story with us today on the show.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Amy. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.